almost any country in Europe, it's already cheaper to drive a used electric vehicle than to drive a used diesel or petrol car.
So what we need to do in the medium and long term is to shift away from this fossil fuel production.
We can accelerate the electrification of the current vehicle fleet with strong policy incentives.
Hello and welcome back. Last month, in the first episode of our podcast series, we offered the general introduction to electromobility. We hope that by now, you have a clearer idea about electric vehicles. Today, we'll talk about money. How much does it cost to go electric? What are the costs of owning and using an electric vehicle? This episode will look at prices because they're one of the main factors people consider when deciding whether or not to go electric. To help us navigate through the cost and solutions for consumers, we invited Julia Hildermeyer and Jaap Berger from the Regulatory Assistance Project and Robin Loos from the European Consumer Organization. So let's hear from them about where the cost of an electric vehicle comes from.
Currently, the electric vehicles are a bit more expensive to purchase than conventional engine. That is because the price of the battery of the electric car, which raises the cost, but also it's a matter of scale, of production scales. We produce less electric cars than combustion engines. It requires investment to transform the supply chains of vehicles, of car manufacturers. So the reason of this expensive price is as it is, you know, the battery, the supply chain, and these investments that are required at the moment. But of course, the question goes further than the purchase price. It's from how much does it cost to buy it, but also how much does it cost to run it. And in that sense, it is what we call the total cost of ownership of a vehicle. And it's something we at Beog calculated for several countries in Europe and several user profiles. The global picture is that in a couple of years' time, for everyone, every consumer buying an electric car in Europe, it will be better to choose an electric vehicle rather than a combustion engine. It is because production costs of electric vehicles will go down, but also thanks to a political impetus at the EU level, which is, as you may know, the so-called ban on combustion engines by 2035. So all this will dramatically change the supply chain of electric vehicles and make them cheaper to buy. But as I said, already today, for some consumers, it is the best choice to buy an electric car already, because in some countries you have specific incentives, such as in France, in Germany, to buy these electric vehicles. We need also to look at this production impact. And what we did is to try to calculate the cost for a car to be decarbonized, its production to be decarbonized, and how it would impact consumers. It is indeed more expensive to decarbonize the production of an electric car, because the battery is quite tough to decarbonize, and we're only at the start of the process. But it does not change the picture that electric cars will financially be a better choice for consumers. That is mostly because if you decarbonize the production of an electric car, and if you have a decarbonized electricity production, then your car is net zero, let's say. But if you decarbonize the production of a petrol car, you still have to make it run on petrol. And if you switch petrol to new types of fuels, which could be, notice, synthetic fuels, this will put the price way, way too high for consumers. So if we are going that way, it won't change the picture that electric car will be the best financial choice for consumers.
Electric vehicles are indeed more expensive than their gas-fueled equivalents, but buying new models is not the only option. In Europe, most drivers purchase used cars. For example, in 2021, people in Belgium bought 1.8 times more used cars than new cars. More affordable, second-hand electric vehicles can often meet the needs of a broader consumer group. So where do we stand now with the second-hand market for electric cars?
So if you buy a used electric vehicle, it's a much more affordable option, and the running costs are so much cheaper that in almost any country in Europe, it's already cheaper to drive a used electric vehicle than to drive a used diesel or petrol car.
Most of the new cars, being electric or conventional, in Europe are sold to companies or to leasing companies. The majority of people don't buy new cars. So what we looked at is for second-hand and third-hand vehicles. And there we see that the trend is very clear. For these people, the purchase price also have an impact, but the most important part is the running cost. So how much fuel you have to, how much petrol, how much diesel you have to put in your tank, and then how much electricity you have to put in your tank. And for these people, the electric car is the best choice and will continue to be so in the coming years.
The EU national and regional governments have a huge role to play in encouraging the use of electric vehicles and ensuring equal access for everyone. For example, they can create incentives. They can set up schemes that make it easy for consumers to buy electric cars. They can also create strategies to steer the market or offer public and private investments. Our experts discuss how political decisions at the European and national levels can shape the transition to electric vehicles and how the market can evolve within this context.
We can accelerate this, the electrification of the current vehicle fleet, with strong policy incentives that are needed to scale up the market and bring costs per vehicle unit down. And I think historically a very big driver of electrification of new cars are the cars and vans CO2 standards that need to be ambitious and that need to contain strong zero emission vehicle mandates for manufacturers to have the certainty to invest into new EV models and make these available to the consumer. And of course, the end date for sales of combustion engines by 2035 is going to bring a huge certainty for investment for all companies, all stakeholders, all actors in the industry and the supply chain. So this is, I think, a strong driver. Another big incentive are local measures. And I just want to mention, in particular, zero emission zones and combined with congestion charges that can be very effective on local level to avoid unnecessary traffic and car use in the first place, but also drive electrification of the traffic that is still needed. We've studied this for the case of urban delivery trucks. And we found that already an emission charge in the range of 2 to 4 euro a day for 6 days a week per diesel truck will make battery electric trucks more affordable as the alternative, because it will reduce the price gap between the two alternatives. And that's a very small charge with a very big impact for electrification and all the other benefits that are associated with it for city centers, such as cutting noise and pollution. There are many good policies already in place. We need to make sure they are well designed, in particular when we speak about subsidies for the upfront cost of electric vehicles. So rather than just subsidizing costly vehicles, another interesting solution for governments is to design bonus-malus schemes that would basically tax combustion engine vehicles higher and use the income of this tax to create a bonus to help buyers of zero emission electric vehicles. And this scheme, in the ideal case, could be income neutral for governments and can, for example, also be combined with scrappage schemes for older polluting vehicles, diesel vehicles. So these are leaving the market quicker and can be replaced by newer, ideally zero emission vehicles. And these types of purchase subsidies, if they're cleverly designed, could also be adjusted to income. So they could in particular target lower income households that typically would rather rely on second-hand vehicles. So these are just a few ideas on policy solutions that have already proven effective on local and national level. But there's of course more that can be done on European level, both in driving the offer of affordable EVs through CO2 standards, but also in deploying charging infrastructure through the alternative fuels infrastructure regulation.
And there, as I said, we showed that the price of electric vehicles will decrease, and the advantage, the financial incentive to buy an electric car for first-hand, but also, and most importantly, for second-hand buyers will be there. For the last year, we've seen quite a different trend. And it happened in several steps. Back early this year or late last year, we've seen a very big increase in the diesel and petrol prices at the pump, which gave also a lot of people the incentive to switch to electric vehicles because they see these high prices. And then in the last couple of months, we are starting to see the effects of supply chain problems across the car market, which puts the prices of electric vehicles, but also of conventional vehicles, and put these prices up. Our members in Spain, which is called OCU, did a market survey between 5 years ago and now and compared the price of old cars. And on average, old cars went up by 35%. And it's not only electric cars being more expensive, it's all cars being more expensive. And that's a challenge. And that's a challenge because the so-called total cost of ownership parity that we expect to happen in a couple of years will still happen, but maybe at a higher price than previously expected. It is very important to note that the rise in the market share of electric car is clearly linked to the implementation of what we call the CO2 standards for cars at EU level. Car makers have to respect a CO2 limit for their fleet. And in 2020 and 2021, they had to face new, tougher limits. Otherwise, they would have been fined by the European Union. And to avoid these fines, what car makers did is that they put on the market way more electric cars, a choice that we've never seen before. And the impact on the market is clear. Now we have more than 1 out of 10 cars being sold in Europe is now electric. And the increase and the trend is quite tremendous. So it clearly shows the need to have a policy impetus at this level. The CO2 standards are a good policy, but we can go a bit further. And if we want to have really the cleanest possible solution, but also the most efficient one, there are several policies that could be put in place. First, we need to decrease the weight of cars, make them more efficient. And there are several provisions in the CO2 standards that would allow for cars to be lighter, to be more efficient. And I think it's something we should not forget is to tackle this efficiency of cars. There's also a clear message for consumers to be informed about the real world emissions and fuel consumption, electricity consumption of their cars. And again, there's a directive at EU level that is informing consumers when they go to the dealership about the fuel consumption of their car. The problem is that this directive is now 23 years old. So you see that there's a clearly need to update it to meet the reality of today. And that's also a big important point. If you see the real numbers when you buy a car, it will help you make a good decisions. And going back to the right policies to accelerate the transition, now we need to talk, of course, to how we provide the financing for consumers, be it green loans, targeted help for lower income consumers, but also, you know, these new schemes of pay as you save to avoid that consumers would have to face the high upfront cost and would simply generate savings and repay at the same time so that they, you know, we smoothen the effect of the high purchase price. So there's a lot to be done. But the political impetus has been clearly determining to go further.
Let's imagine that I'm convinced I found a second-hand electric car for an affordable price. So how much does it cost to charge it? And with the rise in electric prices, will my electric car still be convenient and cheaper than a diesel or a petrol car? How do we lower the price of charging?
So an important part of the costs of an electric vehicle for a driver are the running costs and obviously the cost for charging. So the electricity for charging is a major driver of that. If you look at the taxation levels in many countries in Europe, taxes on fossil fuels are in comparison lower than on electricity, especially clean electricity. So that's also something member states should take into account, making sure that shifting transport from using fossil fuels to electric transportation also requires rebalancing taxes there and looking at how to make electricity cheaper in daily life, especially compared to the fossil fuel alternative.
There's one thing to remember is that it's our dependence to fossil fuels that make and that created these high prices. You know that electricity prices are linked to usually gas. So what we need to do in the medium and long term is to shift away from this fossil fuel production, which will help balance the cost for consumers when they buy, but also when they charge the electric car.
If you're able to charge at home, then probably you can benefit from time-varying rates. The most common example in Europe is daytime, nighttime tariff or on-peak, off-peak tariffs. And many of these tariffs allow you to save up to 75% on charging costs by shifting charging to the nighttime. And that's actually what many EV drivers that have the opportunity to charge their car at home do. But if you look at consumers, and that's a growing group of consumers that doesn't have the opportunity to charge at home at their own premises, but relies on street charging infrastructure. Actually, we found there's almost no incentive to shift charging to lower price periods when you're using a public charging station. Part of this is caused by sort of the cost structure. So a charge point operator is paying network costs based on sort of the single highest peak in the year. And after that, there's no further incentive to sort of adjust charging behavior. But also most charge point operators don't really look at sort of the energy portion and just have a single per kilowatt hour or sometimes even a per time rate for charging, which also means that there's a gap, an affordability gap between those that can charge at home using the electricity contract of choice at home and those that rely on public charging. So I guess that's also the topic we should work on in Europe, making sure that those that rely on public charging infrastructure, especially the type of charging infrastructure needed to charge overnight or during daytime, during longer periods, that users get the level of control, get different prices that they can opt in to say, well, I need my car tomorrow morning at 8. I roughly need about 20 kilowatt hours. Please provide me with charging at the cheapest moments instead of immediately charging right when I plug in. And that's where sort of smart charging comes into place and where the multiple benefits of smart charging come into place.
There are indeed many options to decrease the price of charging and to ensure energy efficiency, such as smart charging stations or vehicle-to-grid solutions.
There are a couple of legislative initiatives on European level that will help create a level playing field for different types of charging services and use cases for charging, and help to develop a market for charging services that focuses on what users need and on their different needs in specific use cases. What all users need is transparency on prices for charging, so they need to be able to compare what they'll be paying at the charging point per kilowatt hour. Payment itself for charging on public charging points, for example, needs to be made easy. So paying by card should be standard on all public charging points. And we also think that all charging points that will be built in public, but also in private territory that is publicly accessible, for example, port sites, hotels, supermarkets, etc., where people are likely to charge, should be smart charging capable, which would enable the charging for whichever duration it may take to be as beneficial as it can be for the user, but also for the system. There's more that can be done on the energy side as well to make sure that EVs are rewarded as resources, as flexibility resources for the grid, and that they can deliver all the benefits from smart charging, such as creating savings in the system through charging at cheaper hours when there's plenty of spare capacity on the grid, through integrating renewables when they are abundant, but also the additional grid services that they can deliver by adjusting charging to granular or even real-time signals from the energy market. And there's more that needs to be done in energy market reforms by national regulators in many member states in Europe to make sure that these price signals arrive at the electric vehicle, at the end user, but also at the charging point. So more savings can be made and EVs can participate fully as a resource for flexibility in the system.
Smart charging is definitely a great tool to make charging cheaper for the user, but also for the system. So looking at from a system perspective, for instance, the European Commission calculated that by smart charging, each electric vehicle is saving 150 euros a year, roughly, by better utilizing the existing grid infrastructure, by better utilizing renewable energy when it's being produced. But there's also sort of similar benefit on the user side. And there's also smart charging as a technology is an enabler also for newer business models. So similar to the way large energy consumers, well, industrial consumers are able to hedge themselves from volatility of markets. If you look at the concept of energy communities, EV drivers are able to participate in a local energy community, for instance, and invest in the production of solar or wind close to their home. And smart charging technology enables them to utilize that energy when it's being produced. And by doing that, they technically hedge themselves against any volatility of market. So you get a very predictable low price, which is the very predictable low price of renewables for charging your electric vehicle. So that's another great benefit enabled by smart charging technology. Vehicle to grid is an interesting technology that you're really shifting the perspective on what's an electric vehicle. But it's also quite in its early stages. Smart unidirectional charging and bidirectional charging are not so different. And what that also means is that to advance both smart charging and bidirectional charging as a specific flavor of smart charging, we need to make sure that the framework is in place. And what I mean by framework, it's regulatory framework. Are you allowed as a residential consumer to participate in demand response programs? Are you able to feed energy back into the grid or is that prohibited? Are you able to get actual price signals from wholesale markets, or are you on a fixed tariff and are you only getting like signals interrupt charging now and receive a bonus for that? So all of that is needed to make sure that smart and bidirectional charging work. I think the biggest potential for bidirectional charging now is where you're able to optimize energy on site. So as sort of a micro grid with in addition services delivered to the wider grid. But I think for the majority of EV charging and for the majority of the benefits for both for users and the energy system, it's key to make sure smart charging works. And by making smart charging work, by getting price signals right, by making sure that these electric vehicles can participate in demand response programs are being used as a source of flexibility for system operators at the national level and at the local level, services arrive that sort of allow to use that flexibility. By having that system in place, bidirectional charging will come next. And especially over the coming year, we'll see more and more car models supporting bidirectional charging. I think over the years after that, we'll also see the costs of bidirectional charging equipment coming down. So that means it will become more and more affordable. So what we need to do now, since we're still at a very early phase, I would say, of electrification in Europe, if you look at total fleets here, is to make sure that we have these price signals in place from distribution system operators, that they utilize a market-based mechanism to, in real time, interact with sort of the fleet of charging vehicles.
And finally, because this podcast is about users, who uses electric vehicles? Today, our expert Jaap, an electric vehicle driver for the past 8 years, tells us more about his own experience.
Bought a used electric vehicle from France in 2014. Bought it in Paris and drove it back home, which was an adventure, but manageable then. I had very interesting conversations with people talking about, whoa, what's this? Because back then, 2014, there were not so many electric vehicles on the road. So I'm now on my second electric vehicle, which has a much higher range. So the charging is really much less of an issue. But I still have, like, at the moment, I probably need to count them, but sort of 25, 30 different charging cards for different networks, because sometimes you would go to a region where a specific network exists that doesn't work with any type of card or payment. So I'm really hoping that in 2 years from now, I can just use my existing bank card to pay for charging, because that would make things a lot easier.
So research shows that electric cars are both good for our budget and better for the environment. The incentives are there, and so are the solutions to support the shift to electric mobility. But we shouldn't forget that using e-vehicles is only part of a bigger puzzle in our effort to protect the environment. The idea of sustainable transport is about reducing the overall number of cars on our roads, so buying electric models is not enough. We also need to encourage the use of other transport modes, such as cycling, walking, and public transport to decrease traffic on our roads. In the next episode, we will delve even deeper into existing charging solutions and the future of electric charging. See you next time!
This podcast is produced by EuroCities with UserChi, an EU-funded project that supports the development of electromobility in Europe. It does so by designing and testing user-friendly charging solutions in 7 European cities.
The podcast is written and produced by Marion Piniel.
And it's voiced by Daniela Beretta.